For Lyman Ag Supply and the Family Vision Center, both of Atlantic, this is Bob Devensey along with Grant Jelly, the conservation officer for Cass and Adair Counties on this morning's Conservation Report. Good morning, Grant.
Good morning, Bob.
I'm talking to a turkey hunter supreme. You've had a really, really good run this year as far as wild turkeys are concerned.
I have. I don't know about the supreme part. It, you know, it involves a little luck and a little bit of skill, but yeah, I've had a real successful season here in Iowa and took a trip to Nebraska as well. But, you know, this is my favorite time of the year. I'd rather hunt turkeys than any other critter out there. And, you know, it's one of those hit or miss seasons. You know, it looks like we're going to finish up turkey season here in Iowa with some really poor weather, unfortunately. Windy conditions, rainy conditions can make it really tough on hunters. And, of course, now when we're at the tail end of the season, if you step into the woods, it's so hard to see because the foliage is so dense now that it can definitely make it a little bit tougher. But they are still gobbling some on the roost. We're not gobbling as much when they're hitting the ground because we're starting to see the hens maybe start to think about nesting a little bit more now. So they still do the gobbling in the early mornings, but you know, season ends the 21st, so we still got a couple days. Well, tomorrow actually it'll be our final day here in Iowa, so we've still got some time, and looks like the last day may have some hope. It's supposed to be sunny and unfortunately a little bit windy, but sometimes those conditions can also benefit the hunter because you can move around a little bit more. The rain, if you have any rain or wet conditions, they tend to like those more open areas of fields and meadows, so you kind of got to change your style up a little bit, but you can still have a good hunt. So I just want to wish everybody a good and safe last day of the season.
You bet. I'd like to talk about that Nebraska hunt a little bit. We have eastern turkeys, the eastern strain here, and out there they're pretty much Merriam's or a hybrid. Is that a hybrid with the Rio Grandes?
It is, yeah. It's typically the Rio and Merriam's hybrids. Both species or subspecies are pretty similar, but, you know, we've talked a little bit earlier that the eastern turkey, when you think about it, it's kind of a midwestern and even eastern turkey itself, and they tend to prefer habitats that have more forest. Of course, they're kind of a farmland bird. You think of them being in places like Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, where there's a lot of crops, but you get into these Merriam subspecies and they're more of an open terrain type of bird. They tend to do well in real open country. Of course, the Rio is kind of the same way when, you know, coming from the South United States and Texas and even parts of Mexico. They're just more at home when there's a lot fewer trees and more scrubby, arid type conditions. So, you know, I think there's five or six different subspecies in North America, and there's each one kind of favors a little bit different habitat, and they also have a little bit different traits or characteristics about them. Some may gobble more. Of course, the eastern's one of the bigger subspecies, but they all kind of have their own little niche and have adapted to where they live quite well.
Mm-hmm. You were clear out in southwest Nebraska, completely different country.
It is, yeah. That's more of an arid, almost deserty type of habitat. Very few trees. Almost sat on a cactus and, you know, saw animals like mule deer and jackrabbits. And so it's neat how you really don't have to go that far. And it was only 6 hours away. That's all I'm given for my location, by the way. But you don't have to go very far, and things can just drastically change. And not only the plants, but also the animals are totally different to what you're seeing around here in Cass County.
Okay, sounds like a good trip whether you hunt turkeys or not.
It is, you bet.
And sit around. Okay, let's talk about what's going on back here in Iowa. You mentioned the cold weather this weekend, which is indeed true. Our pheasants are just about to go on the nest along with the turkeys.
They are, yeah, and this is the time of the year where, you know, as a upland hunter or turkey hunter, you kind of are on pins and needles because the nesting success greatly is dependent upon the weather conditions that you have during that, you know, not so much usually when they're on the nest, unless they're in a lowland area where rising creeks or streams could totally ruin their, or wash away their nest. But you worry about the pheasant chicks and the turkey poults the week or two after they've hatched and they're out on their own with mom. That's when they've got, they basically don't have much protection from the elements other than mom herself. They've got that real downy type of, well, it's almost a fluff on them and doesn't do real well in wet, windy conditions. So really hope for some dry areas and dry times when the birds first hatch so that they can, after they start to develop those feathers, they greatly have a better chance of surviving. So, and of course, when turkey poults begin to be able to fly, which is 2 to 3 weeks usually, and they can get up off the ground to roost with mom, their chances are greatly increased too, because they've got to not only worry about the weather, predators obviously are a big concern for ground nesting birds. So it's, yeah, we if there's not pheasants sitting on nests now, I would say they will be any time. Up until the last week or two, I was seeing a lot of hens out with the roosters, and now you almost strictly are seeing roosters. I've seen a couple of roosters chasing each other yesterday, so they're still fighting, and but you just don't see the hens anymore. So they've got to sit on that nest for 23 days is what it takes for a pheasant egg to hatch, and then after that we hope for some drier conditions here to kind of make them through that troubled time.
You bet. Those small birds, they're highly vulnerable. It doesn't take them long to lose their body heat. I was judging a dog trial down in southern Iowa, and a rainy, cold weekend, and they were planting pen-raised birds that mm-hmm. don't have any oil in their feathers. For yeah. some reason, the feed they get doesn't mm-hmm. do that. And they were planting birds ahead of us, and then a guy would be coming along behind with a 5-gallon bucket and picking birds up that had already yeah. succumbed, and that would be in the space of an hour. So
yeah.
it happens pretty fast. So we'll hope for better weather, not quite at 95 degree, but something like that. And while we're waiting for that, you can go fishing in any kind of weather. It doesn't make any difference.
You can. Depends on how diehard you are. But, yeah, you know, obviously you see a lot more people out when the weather's nice, but the crappie are still biting at Lake Anita, and talked to some anglers who've been up to Littlefield, and the bluegill are doing well up there. They're on beds, and you can go up there and catch quite a few nice bluegill. So, you know, you don't have to go very far to find a lake here in southwest Iowa that has either got crappie or bluegill biting right now.
You bet. Little technique there. These are good fish to take kids on. They're not afraid to bite, and they're fun to catch. And what's the technique for really getting after them?
Well, if you've got kids, patience is the the number one thing you better have in your tackle box. I've learned that pretty quickly here as taking my own children out. But, yeah, the great thing about panfish fishing is it doesn't require a lot of fancy tackle, you know. You don't see cane poles anymore, but a cane pole is will do the trick. But you know, just anything. You can put a bobber or float on there, and mealworm or a wax worm, or even a bit of a night crawler. I mean, just about anything they'll bite on, and even have a lot of success. Guys are with artificial jigs and lures like that. So, you know, usually when you're fishing with kids, it's a lot of times best to put live bait on and just cast it out there and let it sit for them. If you can do the let it set part's the hardest thing, but yeah, they're, you know, especially bluegill, and they're still my favorite fish to catch out of all the fish species that we have here in the state, because they fight hard. There's no fish in this world, I'm confident, that fights any harder than a really nice male bluegill. So they can be a lot of fun for kids, and you know, typically if you catch one, you're going to start catching more. So that's the nice thing about them is you don't have to have a $40,000 bass boat and all the equipment. You can take a bucket and a lawn chair and usually sit right there on the edge of the lake, and you'll have real good luck.
You bet. Use real light, real small lures, as you were saying, but then what, 4-pound test
yeah.
line? That's about as big as you go.
4 or even 2 pounds sometimes. And yeah, the lighter the line, the better. It kind of has a more natural presentation and certainly easier to cast too. So yeah, that's a good point, that light line is, you know, don't expect to go out there with your catfish rod and do real well bluegill fishing. It takes a little bit different type of tackle.
Yeah, going back to the cane pole, with a child that's pretty young and just starting, a cane pole and a bobber would probably be, rather than get complicated with the reels and everything, a pretty good way to get started.
It is, and a lot less tangling, and you don't have to worry about a reel not working. I don't know, kids somehow manage to mess up brand new reels a lot of times, but yeah, just anything simple, and I don't even know if they... I'm sure they still sell cane poles, but you don't see them like you did when I was a kid or years ago. But yeah, they're a great way to start off too. And you can, a lot of times, you know, being 8-10 foot long, you can drop it down right on top of the bluegill bed, and it's a good way to fish.
Yeah, you can always find a willow thicket somewhere and cut down something that'll work very good.
You betcha.
Make you look like the real deal.
That's right.
You bet. Okay, let's go camping for a while. Reservation for the 4th of July. Almost nil. The Memorial Day, I think earlier this week there were 6 campsites available.
Yep.
Of course, by now they're gone, so the 4th of July is getting scarce, and pretty shortly you can start for Labor Day.
You bet. Yeah, that's if you haven't jumped on it, now's the time. You know, there may be a cancellation or two that pops up, but yeah, that's camping is really popular in our state parks, and you know, you drive through any state park here on a weekend and you'll see that they're almost full. So go to the website, you can check camping availability on there, make your reservations online, and again, it's, if you're a first-time camper, you're probably going to learn the hard way that you need to really get on the ball and get those reservations booked way in advance, because they do fill up really quickly.
Right. They're of course about 25-50% of the sites are walk-ons, but yep. You're probably not going to walk on to a really good campsite.
No, you're not. And before I jumped in the car and drove an hour or two, I would certainly make sure that there is a spot there available. So you can always call the park office or talk to the park manager, and they can give you a little bit better insight. But of course, the website's got a lot of good information on how to make those reservations as well.
Yeah. Of course, you never know. If you don't have a reservation, you can sometimes meet some people. I was taking the horse down to Southern Illinois, and we got over into Eastern Iowa Friday night, and mm-hmm. the campgrounds over there are really busy, and so they were full. So I start driving on, and I'm looking the sides, and I think, hey, there's a guy out combine, and there's a kind of an open area. And so I pulled in and got him stopped and said, Janiah, that right-of-way is pretty wide. Would you mind if I camped out there? Oh, he says, no, bring it on in. Camp over there by that shed. He said, good grass and everything. And he came back after he got done combine and had a nice visit. So you can meet some new people, too, you know.
You certainly can, yeah.
Iowa's got all kinds of ways you can camp. You can tent camp. You can sleep out in the open if you want to. You've got cabins, both the family cabins that you reserve for a week, and the camping cabins you rent for 2 days. And then they've got one park has got yurts.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a picture of a yurt, but they're a tent on a platform, right?
Wow, yeah. I guess that may be good with all the rain we've had here lately. So you sleep with a straw in your mouth and you'll be good. But yeah, there's all sorts of neat things. And personally, I think the cabin option is kind of the way to go, because you know, a lot of times everything is provided in the cabin. You may have to bring your sheets and linens and things like that. But, you know, if you look at the price of those compared to the price of a fancy hotel chain, it's, you know, you get your money's worth at those cabins. And you can bring the whole family or another family with you a lot of times. So they're really nice. They take good care of them. And, yeah, that's kind of the hidden secret, I think, in Iowa camping.
Okay. A lot of good things going on. If you're boat fishing, be sure to wash your boat off before you leave the lake that you're in and get it cleaned up and do things like that. Have your safety equipment and be safe and have a good time in the great outdoors.
You betcha.
For Lyman Ag Supply and the Family Vision Center, this has been Bob Evensee along with Grant Jelly, Conservation Officer for Cass and Adair Counties, on this morning's Conservation Report.